Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Patrick Beja here, and this is going to be the first Pixels of 2021. I'm excited. I hope you are as well. I hope your year is starting well. Mine is starting okay. In case you haven't heard, I have some news for the year. I'm expecting another child in April, so that's going to have a little bit of an impact on the way I can handle the workload, but we'll see how that goes. It's not there yet, but it's coming. We're supposed to get it. The delivery is supposed... I was going to try to make an Amazon pun. I'm not going to. Anyway, it's going to happen around April, if all goes well, and that will be crazy, and it's going to be a little bit of a crazy time. So that's how my 2021 is starting. Now that we're out of the resolution of what happened in 2020, well, we're not completely out, but for some aspects we are, we can talk about video games again. And that's what we're going to do. A bunch of things happened over the past month, and we're going to cover all of it, all of them, everything. So the first, let's go in chronological order. As you know, in this show, I guess I'll remind this to those who maybe have not listened before. This is a show where I cover the news from the past month and try to summarize, analyze everything so that if you're interested in gaming, you get a nice compact dose of what's happened without having to listen to a show every single week to understand what's happening in the world of gaming. And so let's go in chronological order, and I'll also talk about the games I'm expecting in, I'm hoping will be good in 2021, and I'm hoping will come out. We'll insert this in the middle of the episode. So one of the big things that's going to be that was confirmed in the beginning of the year was the date for Super Mario 3D World. And it's a big thing maybe for me more than for many other people because I really loved that game. It's a game that came out on the Wii U, and it was really underrated, or I guess not really underrated. The problem is very few people played it because it was on the Wii U and very few people owned a Wii U. So that was a hurdle. And it was really a great Mario game. It's not a 2D Mario game, and it's not a full 3D open world-ish Mario game. It's one of those that still retains the spirit of a 2D platformer, but is definitely in 3D. The camera is shifted mostly a little bit upwards, and you still go mostly from left to right or bottom to top on the level. And I'm really looking forward to playing it again. I've been hoping or waiting for it to come out ever since the Wii came out, because I want to play it again, and I guess I don't want to hook up my Wii U. But it is so inventive and so clever and so cleverly crafted in its game mechanics. That's the one with the cat suit, which is really cute and funny. But on top of that, it's going to feature an add-on called Bowser's Fury, which is another mode, I suppose. The details are a little bit scarce, but it seems like Bowser is going so crazy that even his son, Bowser Jr., is teaming up with Mario to stop him. And it's a little bit dark, even, and it's kind of surprising that, you know, Nintendo would comment on American politics like that. But okay, sorry, that's the last one. But it looks interesting, and Mario turns into this giant cat Super Saiyan monster thing, or not monster, but fighter. It's going to be really interesting to see what it is, and I'm very much looking forward to it. That game is coming out February 2nd, I believe. No, February 12th, sorry, on the Nintendo Switch, and I'm honestly, it's the game I'm the most excited for the beginning of the year. But that was maybe a little bit biased. The other thing that's been making the news is Star Wars and Disney in general, or I should say LucasArts Games. It's not Lucas... Wait, what's the name of the company that they are, or the division they're forming? I believe it's LucasArts Games. It's not... No, Lucasfilm Games. That's the name. Sorry, LucasArts, of course, is the old-school developer from Lucasfilm. So that one is different. It's called Lucasfilm Game, and it's going to manage the games that are taking advantage of the Lucasfilm IPs. One game that was announced is a Indiana Jones game, which honestly, I'm not... We'll see what happens, but I'm not incredibly excited about that game. I don't know what would be like the concept of Indiana Jones is so video game template that I don't know how much it will be interesting as a video game, which isn't already every other video game. I mean, we have Uncharted, we have Tomb Raider, and those are essentially Indiana Jones games. So would it be a game like that, which would just have an Indiana Jones skin? I don't know how I'm sure there would be ways of making it a little bit different, and hopefully they do. But and maybe for some people that alone is going to be enough. You know, that's going to be really exciting for people, and they're going to be very happy to see that happen. But we'll see. And of course, it should be noted that Machine Games is developing the game, a Bethesda studio, which, by the way, is now Microsoft studio. I'm wondering how that deal came about and how much they're going to be putting games on different platforms, if there's a Lucasfilm Games mandate to put it not only on the Xbox, which would make sense. What was that deal inked before Microsoft decided to purchase Bethesda and ZeniMax? There's a whole other conversation to have there. But Machine Games, of course, made the reboot of Wolfenstein, the Wolfenstein games, which I loved. I think they were incredible. They're really good at having you kill Nazis, which I guess they're going to continue with Indiana Jones. But those were first-person games, and I have a hard time imagining a compelling Indiana Jones game in first-person. But maybe it would work. I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But we're going to get that at some point in the future. We also have a lot of news on the Star Wars front, with the exclusive deal with EA coming to an end. Of course, for the past 8 years, EA was the only company, video game company, able to develop video games based on the Star Wars franchise. And in the past 2 years, 3 years, they kind of used it well, but in previous years, they really didn't do much with that IP. And so Disney has decided that the deal is coming to an end, but that doesn't mean they're not still working with EA. It's not exclusive, but EA is still going to be making games. But when the deal expires, supposedly or presumably, we're going to get another game from Ubisoft, from the team that did The Division, which is, of course, a game as a service type third-person shooter. It's Massive Studios, I think, Massive Entertainment. And I would love to see a Star Wars game made by them. A Star Wars game as a service type game could be really cool. And it kind of gets close-ish to an MMO, possibly, but it would be, I'm guessing, a little bit more accessible, a little bit more point-and-shoot and FPS-y or TPS-y, and a little bit more arcade. And I think I would be very, very interested to see what they do with this. And I don't expect this to come out until, again, the deal with EA expires, which is 2 years away, so that's not going to be happening anytime soon, but, or I guess not in the next few years, but it is an interesting development. And it seems like Disney is kind of getting things in order with their gaming divisions, and the Lucasfilm aspect of things is going to be handled. And I kind of hope that they manage the Marvel things in a better way. I guess it was only Avengers, which wasn't great. But anyway, so that's the news from Disney. There was also CES, not a huge amount of things to discuss there. There are some mobile versions of the existing newly announced graphics cards and CPUs from both NVIDIA and AMD, which are coming out. So you're going to get some great mobile gaming performance on all of those. We also had the announcement that Stadia is going to be coming to LG TVs fairly soon. So that's pretty cool, because of course that is the potential for Stadia and streaming services is to be integrated everywhere. And integrated into LG TVs is a great deal for Stadia. I'm not going to dive back into the issues of that Stadia has, but it is the good way to go for them. And of course, I'm sure that other streaming services are having similar deals being discussed. That's, you know, Xbox and Luna, Amazon service, which are also going to be appearing on different TVs. Just like, you know, you have Netflix on your TV, you're going to have these gaming services as well. What else is happening? We had I guess I have to talk about Cyberpunk. It's not something I particularly want to, because everything has been said, I guess. It's chugging along. It's doing patches that improve performance and remove bugs. The one thing that I will mention is there was a somewhat strange apology posted from one of the co-founders of the company. It's not strange because he didn't apologize. He actually did, and he took responsibility, and he said, you know, I am responsible, and it's an executive level decision to put it out. So blame me if you want to blame someone. I don't know how much, you know, the money people are blaming him, because apparently they sold like 13 million copies, even when you take into account the refunds, which is kind of crazy. 13 million copies, like, I think that's what I was saying last month. They of course they put it out at that point. Of course they did, because they sold a lot of copies on the old gen consoles, and that made a lot of money, and it was the right choice if you look at the financial aspects of things. So yeah, that was to be expected, or I guess I didn't expect it to sell that well given all of the issues. So I don't know what that says about either the honest reporting about the issues or the gaming community. I don't know. It's just weird. And I guess people don't care that the game is buggy and they still want to buy it because they want to give it a try. And you can't say that they buy it unaware of it, right? They don't. Everyone's, I'm guessing, everyone's aware of the issues of the game at this point. Anyone who's barely informed about video games knows. So it's everyone making their own decisions. And by the way, there was a report by Jason Trier at Bloomberg about the issues that led to the disastrous release of Cyberpunk 2077. There are, of course, issues of crunch and management, which I'm not going to get into because we've talked about this a lot. And CD Projekt, you know, I've talked about this about T Project many times, and it's just par for the course, I guess, which is still an issue and a problem, and I don't want to diminish that, but we've talked about it a lot. The thing I want to bring up from the piece is the fact that the producing of the game was problematic. The producing of the game was amateurish. The ambition for the game was way too high for the experience of the studio, it feels. There was a little bit of hubris. Like, they were the guys who made The Witcher 3, so they could do anything. And they bit off a lot more than they could chew. But also, the producers, I don't know how things were organized, but a lot of people were working on stuff disconnected from the rest of the team, doing work that was either redundant or unnecessary or that didn't connect properly with the rest of the team, stuff like that. It feels like a young company because, again, remember, CD Projekt, their only big game was the Witcher 3. And that's not a huge amount of experience when you want to make the biggest game in history, which in some respects, Cyberpunk, well, maybe not the biggest, but one of the biggest. And so, yeah, that is part of what led us to where we are. With, I should note, again, a lot of people very happy with the game. A lot of people are extremely like the game, love the game very much, and especially on PC, of course. And so that should be noted as well. And I have no doubt that it will become much better in the coming months. So that's and at the end of this segment, I want to mention what I started with, which is the apology video, which was, to me, the reason it was strange, it was a big detour, but I'm getting back to it. The reason it was strange was they did not, I mean, the what's his name, the co-founder. In the end, in trying to explain the issues with the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One versions, Marcin Iwiński is his name. When trying to explain that, he essentially said, well, we didn't know. We didn't realize it was, buggy like that. And that is, like, that's not an acceptable answer. Everything else in the video is fine, but this is not something that, you can just let go. How did you not know? The bugs were so prevalent and so significant that you can't not have known. So that is not just bullshit. Or at least he's not giving a satisfying explanation of why this isn't disingenuous. This absolutely feels hypocritical. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that. So we're going to talk about the crazy thing that happened with Xbox Live Gold subscriptions and Activision Blizzard eating up Vicarious Visions in just a little bit. That's the latest news. But I do want to talk about the games that I'm hoping will brighten up our 2021. There are a lot of them that are coming out. I'll mention a few that I'm especially curious about. I think there are a few, big hitters, heavy hitters that are, everyone is, I don't want to say gonna love, but are kind of sure bets. So there isn't a lot of question that I'm gonna buy and play them. The biggest ones are Horizon Forbidden West, which was initially slated for, I think, early 2021. Now it's just 2021. I'm not gonna go over why Horizon Forbidden West is a highly anticipated game, but Horizon was such a huge achievement And it's just Horizon. If you haven't played it, it's on PC now, by the way. So it is a really, really exciting thing to wait for. It's one of the big releases for Sony on PlayStation 5. It's also going to be on PlayStation 4, though. So it might not use the PlayStation 5's super fast SSD in a way that is core to the game design, which, you know, is we're going to have to wait a little bit longer for that. Maybe God of War Ragnarok is going to do that. And that game was slated for 2021 as well. I have my doubts that it will come out this year. I wouldn't be surprised if Forbidden West is pushed to summer, maybe even late summer, and God of War is pushed to early 2022. For now, it's still supposed to be 2021, but we really haven't seen anything about the game at all. It could be Sony keeping things close to the vest, but we'll see. I think it might be pushed to 2022. Ratchet and Clank is coming out soon. I'm not a big fan, but we'll see. Gran Turismo 7. But of course, in the big heavy hitters, Halo Infinite, which has been pushed to the fall. I'm very curious about that one. Very curious. Because I've never been a big fan of Halo, but this one is a modern, hopefully modern-ish game, even though it has to stay true to its roots, in that it should be, we were speculating it will be a service game. So we'll see what happens there. But just like many other games on this list, we don't know anything about it. We don't know what the service aspect is going to be. We don't know how, how different it's going to be from the previous Halos. There's going to be a solo and a multiplayer component, of course. But there's going to be, we think, this game is a service element. And how do you make that work in the Halo universe? I'm very curious. Gotham Knights is a game I'm really hoping will be good. I love the Arkham series, and even though this one is not in the canon of the Arkham series, there's another one coming out next year that's going to be there. It's still very clearly the same, you know, engine and the same game. And I'm very excited for that formula to show up again, and with four different characters that will each have their way of playing and their gameplay, I'm very excited to check it out. Hollow Knight, Silk Song, and Elden Ring. I don't think Elden Ring is coming out in 2021, but both of those games are not for me. They're games that people are very excited about, so I'm mentioning them, but they're not really my thing. Same with Monster Hunter Rise. I've tried every single Monster Hunter and I never got it. I've played 10, 20 hours of Monster Hunter World. It didn't grab me at all. A couple of other games, of course, I already mentioned Super Mario 3D World. Hogwarts Legacy was delayed to 2022. Far Cry 6, again, not one of my games, but I got it with my new PC, which I can talk about in a second. So I'll play it. And Resident Evil 8 Village is coming out as well very soon. I believe it's in May. And so it's not very soon, but it's soonish. It seems like the 7th. It's back to the roots of Resident Evil, which is super scary and hectic action. Not hectic, but panicky action. And that's not for me either. I'm too much of a wuss nowadays. So the other things are, I'm just going to go over the games that I'm actually excited about. I think Kena Bridge of Spirits could be interesting in that it's really graphically stunning, but we don't know anything about the gameplay. And that concerns me. Not concerns me, but I'm curious about, and we don't know anything, so I can't really judge it. But it's so pretty. It's coming out supposedly early 2021 on PS4, PS5, and PC. And it looks like a freaking Pixar movie. It's incredible. So we'll wait for that. Returnal is also a game I'm curious about. It's a PS5 exclusive, I believe. I don't think it's coming on PS4. It's coming on March 19, and it's a game by Housemarque, which made, you know, that shooter game that came out at the beginning of the PlayStation 4? Ugh, Resogun. And it's very arcadey, and Returnal is a 3D roguelite type experience, which seems to pull on Housemarque's expertise on shooter and heavy action. So that I'm actually kind of curious to see. We've seen a little bit of footage, and it could be cool. Of course, roguelites are never, I never get tired of them. I'm sure some people do, but it's a very, it's a really good formula. It's like, you know, FPSs or sports games, or it doesn't really get old, I don't think, as long as you have an interesting mechanic around it and you make the thing evolve. There's other things, of course. Rogue Legacy 2, Darkest Dungeon 2. Deathloop is also a game that I'm curious about, and that is PS5 exclusive, by the way, even though it's an Arkane game, which is owned by Microsoft now, so that's interesting. But we don't know. It's coming on in May 21st, and we don't know anything about the time loop mechanics or the multiplayer mechanics, because there are two players, apparently, and we don't know anything about that, so I'm curious. Destruction All-Stars is coming in February, and it's going to be included in the PlayStation Plus. And that's a weird game. As you notice, there are a lot of PlayStation games, but it's a weird one. You drive a car in an arena, and you have to fight with other people who are in cars. But if your car is destroyed, then it will blow up, and you can run around and get into another car. It's going to be included in PlayStation Plus, so I'll check it out. I think it could be a fun few hours of gaming. I don't expect it to be more than that, but I'm still a little bit curious. A lot of PC games as well. Age of Empires 4, Back for Blood in June, which I've mentioned a few times before, I think is way too close to Left 4 Dead, and that, you know, making a clone is not, you know, it's time has passed, I think. Stalker 2 supposedly coming out this year. Warhammer 40K Darktide, which, if you're talking about the Left 4 Dead clone, this could be a bit more interesting. Some, you know, Japanese-ish things. Bravely Default 2 is coming out at the end of February. Deedlit and Wonder Labyrinth. That's something that I don't think anyone other than me and a few people are interested in, because it's based in the Record of Lotus War anime. And it's a Metroidvania that I tried a little bit. It's available in early access, and it's kind of cool. You should check it out if you like Metroidvanias or the Record of Lotus War. Ghostwire Tokyo, Persona 5 Strikers is coming to the West, but the one I want to mention a little bit longer is King of Fighters 15. That's, you know, my fighting games love is and lust is all over King of Fighters 15, which is supposed to come out in 2021. I still buy all of the fighting games that are from series I loved as a teenager and as a young adult, even though I don't really play them to a competitive level at all, and I don't have time. I still buy them, launch them, do a little bit of combos, play a little bit. I enjoy it very much. And if Street Fighter 6 or Tekken 8 are announced, I will, of course, be super excited, even more than for King of Fighters 5. And it's not impossible. You know, those games are reaching their end of life, and it's a new generation. So I think those are coming, and we'll see if they get announced this year. A few strange things. I'm not too excited about Scorn or even The Medium, which are Xbox exclusives, because again, they seem like they are going to be games that work on a gimmick. In the case of The Medium, it's that dual world, and in the case of Scorn, it's that Geiger aesthetic. And I haven't seen anything that would make me think there's anything more than that for those games. But we'll see. I might be pleasantly surprised. 12 Minutes is a curious looped narrative game where you can influence the way things turn out and evolve in those 12 minutes with a view from the ceiling into a single room. It's a strange thing that I'm very curious about. Stray, that game about a cat in a robot world, cyberpunk world populated by robots and neons. Curious about that one too. Mostly because it's Annapurna Interactive, which has, you know, released Outer Worlds and a few others that were really good. Notice that a lot of the games are just noted 2021. So it might be that many of them are just delayed. We'll see. If we go to Blizzard for a second, of course, we're going to have the BlizzCon online in February, I think in the middle of the month, and that's going to be super exciting. We're going to see more there. I really hope we have a date for Overwatch 2. I suspect we won't have a release date, but I hope they say like they did for Overwatch 1, beta coming, you know, in this case, this year. I hope they will do that. And I hope I will get into the beta. And if I don't, I'm going to break something. Just, you know, don't put it out on in April, because I'm going to have a second kid and I'm not going to have a lot of time. So thank you. Diablo 4 is not going to come out this year. Like, I don't know if anyone is hoping it will, but it won't. And I don't think even a beta, nothing this year. Diablo 4 is far off still. I would expect a beta maybe next year. Diablo Immortal, though, will, I believe, come out this year. We'll see. And on the Nintendo front, Breath of the Wild 2, I think, is coming out this year. I talked about it last month, I think, but I think the new Switch and Zelda will come out this year in the first half of the year. We'll see if that happens, but I expect it to. Bayonetta 3 might come out. Metroid Prime 4, I thought it might, but I might have been a little bit too optimistic. We might see a Metroid Prime remaster collection, though. So that will get the Metroid fans excited. So, yeah, those are the games that are, you know, there are many, many others, of course. I didn't mention everything, but those are the games that are I'm excited about for 2021. All right. What happened with Xbox Live? A few days ago, 4 or 5 days ago, Microsoft announced that they were increasing the price of the Xbox Live Gold subscription. And not by a little. It was like by a buck or a couple of euros, even in euros, and 5 euros for 3 months. And like the 3 months was the max you could get. But it was essentially becoming almost the price of Xbox Game Pass. And of course, the obvious choice, the obvious intent was to push people to Game Pass. The problem is, and they put it out, I think it was late Tuesday or even Friday, which is as coined or as put forth by the West Wing, it's take out the trash day. If a piece of news, if an announcement comes out on Friday, you know that the company announcing it doesn't want it picked up. They want it, you know, to go quietly and no one to mention it. Of course, this didn't happen. In the middle of a pandemic, when people are using... So, of course, if you don't know, Xbox Live is what you need. Xbox Live Gold is what you need to play online. It's the equivalent of PlayStation Plus. And you need that to play online. If you don't have it, you can only play locally. And so, in the middle of a pandemic, when people use video games to play with their friends, that didn't go over very well. Gamer outrage. And very well handled by Microsoft for once, they reversed course immediately, like I think it was 12 hours, and they are not pushing the price. It's remaining what it is. And they announced that the games that are free to play will not need the Xbox Live Gold subscription to play, meaning Fortnite, Warzone, things like that, are included in, you know, you can play them online with your friends without having to pay the subscription. So that's a significant reversal. I suspect that they crunched the numbers and figured that they would get more money from the people purchasing, you know, doing in-game microtransactions in those games, because there are more people doing it if you don't need the Xbox Live, and that is going to be beneficial for them in the end. But it was... I don't want to say it was a miss by Microsoft, who's been known for its misses in the past few years and the past decade, but it wasn't the right time, or maybe they thought we're never going to have a better time to give it a try, and we need to push Game Pass, but it wasn't very, obviously it was a miscalculation. Maybe not a miss, but a miscalculation. And to their credit, they reacted very quickly and kind of nipped it in the bud and spun the story into something positive with the live gold not needed for free games, which I think has, you know, changed the narrative on it. So it's like people are like, well, okay then. Oh, cool. I guess I can play those games. You know, I'm guessing they might have studied both scenarios. Do we hike up the price of gold? And they could have done both, honestly, but do we hike up the price of gold, or do we make it not necessary for free-to-play games? And they already knew what it would mean in each case, and so they could pivot quickly from one to the other. So, yeah, anyway, in the end... it's not too bad, I guess. And the last thing I want to cover is the inclusion, the gobbling up of Vicarious Visions by Activision, or by Blizzard Entertainment. And this is a little bit of a weird one. Vicarious Vision is a developer that Activision Blizzard bought a while back, a few years back, and they've been mostly making some remakes and some ports. They did the PC version of, or they helped with developing the PC version of Destiny 2. They developed the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy, the Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2, which were very well received. The Crash Bandicoot 4 was successful, but not successful enough, it seems, that they will get to do that again. Activision decided they're better off helping out Blizzard, and it's not clear if they're going to just stay Vicarious Visions or like an independent team inside Blizzard. And the Blizzard had been getting more developers for years, and they keep hiring and hiring and hiring. Of course, there are people who leave the company, so, but this is a great way of getting a lot of developers that know their stuff and they're gonna be up and running very quickly. It's about 200 people. They're you know, folding them in, and I don't know what to think of that, because of course it seems Blizzard needed the developer. There's some talk about the Diablo 2 remaster that they're going to be working on, which would make sense. But it's also, so the fact that there are developers coming to the company is great, because this is investing in the core strength of the company. But at the same time, I think a lot of Blizzard's strength was its company culture and its company identity. And things like that, moves like that, I think dilute that, or have the potential to dilute that. And it's another move that seems to indicate that Blizzard is just another studio at Activision Blizzard at this point. Maybe it's still a little bit of a privileged studio, because it does have a lot of very, very strong IPs. And it might be that, you know, I'm hoping is that these games are going to be very strong, and Overwatch 2 and Diablo 4 and maybe the mobile games and anything else they're developing is going to be very strong. But that kind of move is uncharacteristic for something like Blizzard. Or, you know what? Actually, I'm saying that, but a long time ago, they also bought, what became Blizzard North. I can't remember the name of the company back then. But the ones who did Diablo, right, with Breivik and his team. And I guess that didn't turn out too well because things didn't work out with the integration. It was kind of difficult. But it doesn't seem like the way Blizzard does things. And it's another indication that the way Blizzard did things for the first 20 years is not the way that things are being done anymore. And the fact that that Moheim has left is... there was a cause for that. So we'll see. I'm not saying, I'm not one of those doomsayers that is saying, oh, Blizzard is dead, they can't do anything good. Absolutely not. I think that's a ridiculous way of looking at it. It really is more motivated by emotion than by anything rational. But it certainly is a change and one that I'm looking at closely with a little bit of concern might be a strong word, but certainly attention. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm excited to see what will come out of BlizzCon, of course. That is kind of it's another make or break moment for Blizzard because the beginning of 2020 wasn't great with Warcraft 3 Reforged. Shadowlands was very well received, so they kind of got an extension on their fans' patience. But they have to show something at BlizzCon that is going to be exciting to Blizzard fans. And I really, really think they have to announce dates for games. Like, it's getting to a point where I understand that people, by the great Miyamoto saying, people don't remember when a game is late, they remember if it's good or bad. And of course, this applies, but at some point you do need a game to judge if it's good or bad. And of course, I don't want them to put out games that aren't ready, but I would still love them to put out games. And probably Overwatch 2 is the closest candidate for that. And it is a difficult thing to do well. Overwatch 2, we'll talk about it when BlizzCon happens, so next month, but it is... Yeah, it's going to be an interesting BlizzCon. And that's going to be it for this episode. That was, we had the holidays, so it was a little bit less news coming out, fewer games and some games that I'm maybe not super excited about. I'm not a big Hitman player is what I'm trying to say. But things are going to kick back up in gear this in the next few weeks, and we're going to have an exciting next episode next month. So thank you so much for listening and for sticking with me. I'm Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can come chat if you wish to do so. And I hope you enjoyed the show. I will talk to you again in a few weeks. Till then, play well, and many hugs to all of you. I hope your 2021 is starting off well. I'll leave it to that. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, From Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.